And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 874. It's a Monday, so we're here recapping your week in Fab, week 22 Fab. And, you know, as usual, well, no, he's not here. Bented is not here today because Bented is slacking. He's probably going to send us a foot picture or a leg picture in the chat. He's at a beach somewhere. Like, if you're a Patreon member, you know the joke behind that. But there'll be something along those lines. But as the dad jokes that I am, I brought a different Ben to the picture here. Player that's also having a lot of overall success in the NFBC this season. You can find him on Twitter at Ben Bingham MLB. Ben, how you doing, my friend?
Bubba, I'm doing great. Good to talk to the hardest working guy in the biz here. Good to chat with you.
I appreciate you joining me. I've been looking forward to this since we set it up, and I've been wanting to do this for a while, like I told you before the show. And plus, I'm looking forward. I get to meet you in person in Arizona in like 2 months.
So, man, I'm pumped about FPAS. That'll be wonderful. It's my first time going. I'm excited to meet you and everybody in person.
Yeah, it'll be great, and you'll want to come back every year. It's not always possible, but once you do it once, it's kind of on the list every single year to come and hang out and talk some ball. But a couple things before we get rocking and rolling, just to kind of let the listeners get to know Ben Bingham over here, is I've had the luxury of, you know, interacting with Ben in our Discords and other Discords, as he's a very active fantasy baseball player. But just for fun, roughly, how long have you been playing fantasy baseball?
Probably around 6 years. Started off in, you know, a couple home leagues, and got into the Earth Leagues. I'm in the Atlanta area Earth League pretty early, probably earlier than I deserve to, but I've been commissioner of that league for a few years. So that's a ton of fun getting to draft in person, had that experience there, and you just can't replicate that online. So drafting in person is a ton of fun with that group. And that's a really tough group, but in the NFBC overall, you know, just generally NFBC, been playing for a few years, added more leagues each time this year, as we'll probably talk about a little bit. I'm getting into the auctions more, and that's been a ton of fun. So just adding something new and learning something new every year, and I love it.
No, it's great. I think it's really cool because, like you're saying, it's been like 6 years, 3 years in the NFBC, and we'll get to your success shortly. But I remember when I'm talking to Phil Dussault a couple of years ago on my show, this was before he won his, you know, monstrous robot season. He'd only been playing for a couple of years. Like, there's a lot of new faces coming around, which is great to see. And you mentioned the fact you're starting to like auctions more. I love auctions more. I've talked about it here and with Bloom a ton. And if I had the time, that's all I would do, because I would not do a snake draft if I had my choice. They're so great. But I think you're liking it extra this year, a little bit more, because at this moment, Ben is third overall in the OLEC, the Online Auction Championships, right now, which is pretty, pretty good, folks. So, Ben, how's that been going for you this year?
Oh, it's been a ton of fun. And I said I got into auctions this year. I'll take a step back and to last year, when my first actual auction was the Bubba and the Bloom Listener League auction league last year. So I got to take my first taste of auctioning last year, and that was a good introduction. So I've done 3 OLEC online auction championship teams this year, plus the Bubba and the Bloom, which is not going so well for me this year. We don't, you know, necessarily have to get into the standings in the listener leagues. That's a tough league. Those are smart players. Oh, but my number 3 overall auction champion, online auction championship team, it's called the Fire Swamp. All of my team names are from the Princess Bride, so that's fun. But the Fire Swamp is doing really well, and I have seen that elusive number 1 several times. Actually, that was there for a while. I was number 1 in the overall, had some injuries, dropped back a little bit, but I'm still right there in the hunt. So I feel good about the team, just trying to strategize ways to close it out.
Yeah, it's sweet. Like I said, you're third overall, and you're 100, you're 80 points, basically 75 points out of second, and you're only a couple hundred out of first. So yeah, there's a lot of moving and shaking that can still take place as this season comes along. I'll get to a listener question right now, since we're talking about it, instead of backpedaling later. There's this guy named Ben Tidd.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, I don't know who he is, but man, the nerve. He had a question for you, though, that says, how have you recovered from all the injuries you suffered around the time you were on Vlad's pod, the FTN pod? Because, yeah, I think you were first overall then, but then I know throughout the Discord and everything, you just had the injury whirlwind hit you right about that time, but you're still third overall, which is pretty nice.
Yeah. Just to be clear to the listeners, Vlad himself was not the one who injured me. the injuries I suffered were injuries to my players who were on my team, but it was Brent Rooker and Jose Ramirez and O'Neill Cruz. And I think Jeremy Pena was hurt some of that time. So it was the offense that really took a big hit. So I was able to pick up some guys in Fab. Carrig was one of them, and several others who've kind of helped me bridge the gap a little bit. But so I've got a few guys that I'm hoping will give me some of the power that I lost during that time. And hopefully O'Neill Cruz comes back to full strength. He's been reinstated and wasn't starting tonight, but I'm hoping to get some of that elite bat speed and home run potential back in my lineup, because I did slip back in the hitter counting stats, and especially in home runs and in average. And Jose Ramirez hasn't been quite the same since he came back. So I'm hoping the squad gets back to full strength and we're ready to make a push for the victory here.
Yeah, I remember this very clearly now, because I had J-Ram, Vinny P went down that same day. I had an O'Neill Cruz and like the Vegas listener league, the 12 teamer we have there. A lot of these pains that you, a lot of pain. Yeah. Like they weren't all on one team, like you said, but I had like Vinny P and J-Ram at least one more. Like I had a triple threat that just got knocked out that I got held with Martinez, got about the same time. It was brutal.
Yeah.
So I fully remember that kind of dead zone we were all sitting in. And I had a couple of good teams going then. They're still doing okay, but it's not like that. To stick to third overall is really impressive, honestly, to fill those gaps the way you did. Especially in your second year of auctions, your first year in the OLACs. What have you noticed? I guess, you know, we'll talk more about this at a later date and time, but I want to ask you while you're here. What have you noticed about doing these auctions this year compared to your normal snake drafts on like how you've, I know building your team's obviously definitely different because you can kind of pick what you want to do, but like the way you've run your teams, the success of your teams, how do you think they vary between the two at all, if at all?
I'm trying to think through that. It's a little, I can't say that I'm successful overall in the auction championship format yet. Of course, had a good team, and one of my other two teams is good. One of them is kind of just mediocre. So I fully credit luck to some of the success. You just have to get the right players, hit on the right guys, and have them stay healthy for the most part. But I do think the auction format gives you a chance to experiment with your rosters, maybe be surprised as players fall into your lap that you might not have expected, get some bargains. And it's kind of the same thing, I guess, my approach for the auction budget. It's kind of the same way I've approached Fab this year, which is not so much spending big at the top, but taking a lot of shots on players who might work out. And at the back end of the auction, that paid off for me with a lot of the pitchers. I've had a really good pitching staff this year. Even though a couple of them got hurt early on, I still was deep enough with the pitchers that I've been able to have that carry me. And in Fab, kind of the same way, I like to take a lot of shots instead of dropping the big dollars on the big name players. And that's come through for me some too. The moment in the auction that I remember is when Yordan fell into my lap for $18. That's and ridiculous. I was shocked. I could not believe it. But then you look back at the rest of the auction and you realize how much money you wasted. And that's just the way it is with any auction. So it's not that everything has to fall perfectly. I think you just kind of get what you get, and that's a starting point, and you work from there. But auctions are a ton of fun.
It's totally well said, because I've had a couple looking back at this past season, especially my OLAC that I'm doing well in, not third overall, in between well. And I laugh because I think I got Chris Sale for like $22, which looking back is ridiculous compared to all the other pitchers. And I remember that night, I remember texting Ryan going, dude, how did this happen? Yeah, there's always a couple of those every draft year. It's like, okay, that was a gift. Let's hope it really is a gift, though, when things are all said and done. And then there's always the sum you overpay for and kind of see where it got. So totally agree with you on those. Real quick before we start talking fab, you're also doing quite well in another section of the NFBC landscape, and that's the draft champions, where you're 12th overall. And yes, 12th overall, still hanging in there for some overall cash, as they say. And in reality, you're only a few hundred bucks out of like the top five, if we really want to get or at least top six or seven, if we want to get wild about it. So a lot of moving and shaking can take place here when we're looking at your DC squad. Because well, first off, when you do DCs, do you do them just to prepare yourself for the player pool, as so many say, or do you have a different philosophy when you're doing a draft champions?
I play to win. Play to win, Bubba.
Hey, he sounds like he's straight out of the SEC, folks. Watch out.
That's right. That's right. Play to win the game. But I've done a lot of DCs because they're low maintenance, and I don't have to do fab on them, and I just like having the teams. I love drafting, so it gives me a chance to do the draft, and I can slow draft them. It doesn't take too much time away from family obligations, and you were saying, like, the auction takes a whole night out of your schedule, and it's hard to make that work. So the slow DCs are nice because when you're drafting them, it doesn't take that much time away from your day. And then when you're setting the lineups, it doesn't take all that much time. So I've got several DCs. I want to say 10 to 12. I haven't counted. I don't remember the exact count. And several of those are in first place in their league. And this, of course, is the best one. I think my next one's around 100 or so. But yeah, I've done those a couple years now, really like the format, and you just have to cross your fingers that enough people stay healthy and go from there.
Yep. No, I totally get you there. The fact that you're doing that successful across all of them, did you have a specific player pool you were targeting in your DCs, or is it just a kind of mix and match all the way across the board for you there?
I had several in common, and some of them really worked out. Some of them didn't, you know, just kind of how it falls. But I was trying to pull up my player shares here. Let me take a look at that and remind myself. So I've got 50% Jake Bowers. That was a nice grab. He's been a strong performer for me. 35% Foster Griffin, and this is across all my teams, but a lot of these are the DCs. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't work out, like Jensen Junk and Ryan Ritter and Eric Lauer, but got some Josh Bell, some Alejandro Kirk, Lizardo, Royce Lewis. You hit on some, and the ones you hit on really, really pay off. So I definitely find myself drafting more of the same players. You get deeper into the DC player pool and see some skills you like and hope that the roles work themselves out.
That's kind of when I look back at my player shares before the season starts. It's usually a lot of the same picks, but they're all like post round, like say 25, because it's like, okay, these are the guys I like. You just got to hope that the skills are actually true and that they stay healthy. The double whammy there in DC is the health is just crushes me. Like when you say it's easier to set lineups, it is on a lot of my teams right now because the options are so limited. what is going on? Like, I'm not at the point where I'm actively starting a injured player yet, but we are getting darn close in a couple
of these. Yeah, teams. I have been there and am still there in a couple DCs. And that's my problem with gladiators. Everybody gets hurt. You know, we just drafted a second half gladiator, and my first round pick James Wood is probably he's probably out, and then I've got Jax, who seems like he's going to be out, and then somebody else I don't remember. So I'm already, gladiators aren't my format.
Yeah, they're tricky. I like doing them for fun to kind of, you know, get the feet wet, but yeah, it is a total just roll the dice on that. There's not a whole lot you could do to help yourself there. All right, we will catch up on you and see how you're doing as the season goes along next time we chat. But let's talk a little week 22 here. Just a couple news and notes. I'll just get your quick thoughts here. Dansby Swanson's on the IL with a grade 2 oblique injury. They're expecting probably around 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks for Dansby. And I'm not a math major, Ben, but
Captain Cut.
Yeah, there you go. Week 6 puts us basically at the end of the season. So I'm on the cut train. I want to see what you were up to.
Yep, I'm definitely cutting him. It's not like he's been a standout performer to wait on anyway. So I'm good with letting him go.
One that just happened, that you don't have to have like any analysis on this, but just kind of get your thoughts, is Edward Cabrera was put back on the IL today with a right middle finger blister, which so that's like a 2 to 4 week. If you were an Edward Cabrera manager, would you be moving on from him?
I would be moving on. And I also saw a note that said if he came back, he'd be open to coming back in a bullpen role. So that sounds like a drop to me.
Agreed. Tyler Soderstrom is going to the IL with hip impingement. No timetable yet, but again, we're at a 6 week plan here, and the A's have absolutely nothing to play for right now. So if you're a Tyler Soderstrom manager and some made this decision potentially Sunday evening, what would you do?
I think I would have held on to him. I don't remember if I had to make that choice. I know I've got him in a couple of spots, but I don't remember where. And he's been solid this year. I would have held on to him to see if he could come back in the minimum, but I understand if you didn't have the spots to let him go.
Yep, he was cut in 6 main events and 26 OCs. So not that's actually, if you look at the percentages, it's not a lot, but some moves were made on Sunday night. But that's about it when it comes to the IL. There's a lot going on. A lot more people returned on Monday, which is a rarity. It was actually a nice little Monday afternoon of news that came swelling in. But let's talk about it, Ben. Let's talk some week 22 for those that are new to the show. And if you're new to a Fab show on week 22, well, thanks, I guess. usually I focus on OCs and we talk main events OCs together. OCs have been kind of just a mess of ads, so we kind of focus more on main events. We talk the whole player pool, yada, yada. Basically, just give our thoughts on what we think of the player. Was it worth getting aggressive on? What are our hopes and expectations? And so on and so forth. But before we get to that, I'm going to do my best Ben Ted real quick. Unless, do you want to do the accounting? All right, I can do it. It's up to you.
Go for it, Bubba.
Okay, so I'm going to do the best Ben Ted right now. And this is using the Fab Tracker from the Bubba and Bloom Patreon that Mr. Ryan Bloomfield puts together. Tons of cool sheet things over there, as I say on purpose, just to bug him now. But as Ben does the accounting, the first page, it keeps us up to date on the weekly spends across main events and OCs. Week 22 saw an average of $22 spent per team in main events, up from $20 in 2025. We call that the Joshua Baez tax. In OCs, it was $27, up from $19 last year. That is a massive Joshua Baez tax, and Zach Veen and a few others along the road there. And what's always entertaining to me each and every week when this takes place, as of the end of week 22 in 2025, the main event average remaining balance per team was 127. On 2026, it's 121, so we're pretty close to in line. When we do that same math in the OCs, as of week 22 last year, $169 per team. As of this year, 177. So I've noticed it. I joke about it on the show every time. More and more, no backup bids as people are gone in the OC streets. The other thing that was quite entertaining, though, is this past week, 26 moves on average per league in the main event. Last week we saw 33 because of all the trade movement, but it was 28 prior to that, 25. So we're kind of back in line. It's been about the same since week 19. So still very active in the main events, whereas OCs back down to 16 this week on average moves per league compared to 19 last week, 17 to 16 the previous 2 weeks. Expect the OC number to keep plummeting, I'd imagine. Well, I think the main events will still stay rather enticing here. Ben, I don't know if you have this number. If you don't, just tell me you don't. But off the top of your head, just random, like what on average do you think you have remaining in your teams? Do you have a big surplus? Are you down to like $50? Like where are you sitting?
I definitely don't have any big surpluses. There's a couple of my teams where I'm in the very low double digits. I think yesterday I was looking at one league at $14 left to spend. That's definitely my lowest. And sitting more around the 50 to 60 range, I'd say on average. But I've been spending, I think, more aggressively on my worst teams, just trying to take some shots at some upside guys. Cause at this point, you know, like I said, I like to kind of save my money and spend lower and take more shots earlier in the season. And I know that doesn't work for everybody and everybody's taste is different in that, but now that we're getting down to the end, I'm fine with living in dollar days and just lining up a bunch of bids, seeing who will work for the week, and then moving on to the next week for more dollar bids.
Yep, and there's plenty to go around, especially in those OLACs. One thing I've really noticed, this is my second year doing OLACs, and it has a massive OC vibe in the fab world. There's a lot of bids that just like, if we, like on this show, we'll talk main events or even all of my AC. You look at those prices and then I compare like the OWAX, there's a lot more, less activity maybe, or less runner ups or just lower prices. It's hit and miss again, could be league to league dependent. Who knows? But I've definitely seen a difference in the OWAX, which if you're down to dollar days now, you can still do just fine.
Yeah, and I've heard you and Ben make this point before, but the remaining balance per team doesn't necessarily reflect the balance of active teams at this point. So you might be competing with people who have, you know, in the double digits instead of the triple digits at this point, and everybody's trying to economize to some extent.
Yep, fully agree there. So we'll see how that continues to play out with man, 5 more weeks of fab after this. So we're counting down the days, but let's get to it. The most added player, if you're looking at Ryan's thing, Ben, just a heads up, it goes by dollar spent kind of in one, but I go by total numbers, so I'll be bouncing around, but I'll keep you in line. The most added player according to main events this past week, Zach Veen of the Colorado Rockies. Was not biased because he was already widely stashed. We'll get to him next, but Zach Veen added in 59 main events, average of $44, max of 116. Zach Veen was added in 205 online championships, average of 28, max of 201. So people got a little frisky on that one, and this is why that OC spending this past week was higher. But when I see a big outlier like that, 75th percentile was $36, so a lot more was close to the average in the OC world. Zach Veen hits in 3 of his first 4 games, 2 home runs, but Ben, we were worried, would he play versus lefties? And night one, what's the answer, Ben?
Nope.
So what were your thoughts on this? How interested, I guess, were you in Veen this week?
I liked him as a flyer, but I was very tempered recognizing the danger of the lefty-lefty. They just have so many outfield options in Colorado. And sure enough, yeah, I was looking at the week this week, 3 lefties, 3 righties, if I remember correctly, and I was afraid he would start exactly 3 games, and we may end up seeing that be the case. So I don't mind having a few platoon guys on my bench, but not spending up big for somebody like this when there's already some guys on the waiver wire for cheap that might have a similar skill set. He is rocking a 30% strikeout rate so far, but he's got the big exit velocities. Could be somebody who provides you some pop and some stolen bases down the last few weeks, but he'll need to play. So we'll see exactly how many plate appearances he gets. But strong side, I think that still works for you. I just wasn't ready to spend the big bucks on him.
Yeah, I got some shares, but it was primarily like real cheap. I don't think I spent more than like $12 on any of them. It just kind of fell through the cracks. I'm like, okay, I can live with that. We can play that game. But yeah, I was worried, and I'm not starting him in most leagues this week, at least for the first half of the week. So
yep.
We'll wait and see how that one goes. Skills do look improved from what we saw last year when he got called up. It kind of faltered. His AAA numbers improved. I mean, we have a small MLB sample, of course, but definite worth a shot this late in the season. But tempering expectations, and people are getting that front and center at this point in time. All right, the next. Oh, wow. We actually have ways to go. I forgot because 32 times. So the next most added player in the NFBC main event, Kodai Senga of the New York Mets, the new closer for the New York Mets, Kodai Senga, picked up in 47 main events, average of 29, max of 67. Senga was picked up in 159 online championships, average of 18, max of 71. Devin Williams on the IL, kind of like a dead arm, forearm type deal. No timetable to return. They're hoping for sometime in September. And Senga went 3 for 3 this past week on saves. Saves we don't get if we picked him up in Fab, Ben. But I tweeted about it on Sunday night. I'm in the Senga business. That was one of my priority targets where I needed saves. What were your thoughts on Kodai Senga? Because the starting Senga has been a roller coaster ride. Closing Senga looks a little different.
Just wait, Bubba. Wait till this week. He's got a 26% K rate, a 15% walk rate, which is really high. So that's about a K minus walk of 11 to 12%. I think he's a great spec to go for if you need saves. I mean, obviously, if you're trying to make up ground in saves, you're scrounging everyone you can get, and he's an obvious target. So I think he may be able to keep the role the rest of the year if Devin Williams is out, but the walks could become an issue. You might have some whip concerns, but if you're scraping for saves, I'm all for it. I think I didn't get any of him, even though I had some bids in, because I just didn't have enough money in the leagues where I was chasing saves. But I think it's a good shot to take.
Yep, because it came down. We'll talk about some of the other guys. It was Sengas of the world. We had, Joyce was going to be popular, and a few other options out there. So, you kind of had to pick your battle and see where it went. And Senga was what I landed on. So we'll see how that goes. I'm really curious your thoughts here. Jackson Kent of the Washington Nationals was picked up in 36 main events this past week. Average of $8, max of 51, but 75th percentile of 6. So honestly, like, the average is skewed because of the max bid, if you can do quick statistics there. Jackson Kent was also picked up at 18 OC, so primarily a deep league play. Average of 6, max of 33. When it comes to Jackson Kent, he made his MLB debut this past week for the Washington Nationals. Looked like adrenaline might have been up a bit with the youngster, the 23-year-old. 4 innings, 3 runs, 5 walks, 6 strikeouts for Jackson Kent. What were your thoughts when you were maybe peeking in on him for this weekend?
I definitely had him in a lot of my bid lists, especially where I needed innings and strikeouts. He's got a two-step this week, right? I don't remember if you said that, but it lines up for a two-step. Like you said, the debut walked too many batters, but looking back at his minor league numbers from this year, it's just a 10K per nine and a less than 3 walk per nine, so I'm not super worried about the walks. I think he'll be able to get the nerves under control and be a pretty serviceable, you know, at this point in the year when you're getting past these few big ads, it's kind of like you're like Goodwill's having a going out of business sale and you're going there on the last day when they've marked everything, you know, 50% off, and then it's 75% off, and now it's 95% off everything. So you're diving through the bargain bins here, but this seems like a pretty good roll of the dice to me on Jackson Kent, because he might be able to go back to the minor league numbers and have a more than one strikeout an inning and a good walk and maybe get you a couple wins.
Yeah, I was very interested in Kent. I don't think I picked up any Kent this week, but I like the skill sets. Walks can be an issue, but like I've said many times, just looking at minor leaguers, most of these really good minor league pitchers all have extreme walk issues, but we've seen some of these guys figure it out and it's awesome. We've seen other guys where it rears its ugly head and you'll have your starts from time to time. We're like, oof, this is a little rough, but that's where we're at. Like you said, if you're looking for strikeouts and potential wins, these are the kind of moves you got to make this time of the year and see where it goes. Like a lot of these streamers late in the year aren't going to be ratio savers. We're a little late in the game for that one. So
yeah,
look at the plus side here. And what I like about the reason I like talking about all these main event discussion points is, like I said, only 18 OC teams. If he pitches well this week, he'll be one of the most added players next week in OC. So these are the kind of names you got to pay attention to as we get going. All right, not on purpose, but do appreciate it. We're talking to catcher here. Rafael Flores of the Pittsburgh Pirates, catcher first base eligible, picked up catcher eligibility over the weekend. Was picked up in 36 main events, average of 6, max of 31. He was picked up in 26 OCs, average of 5, max of 23. Rafael Flores is sneakily putting it together, Ben, and this is a guy that in the offseason for DCs, I'm like, as a catcher 4, he's worth the shot, especially if they bring him up to play first base or something. You get this catcher first base thing. Well, he's hit safely in 5 of his last 6 games, got 4 home runs on the season, and he's playing rather regularly, Ben. So if you're looking for a catcher 2, were you looking at a guy like Rafael Flores at all?
I did add Flores in a league where I needed a catcher, actually in a league where I needed 2 catchers. And so when you're looking at adding 2 catchers in the same week, that's definitely a stretch. But if you look at his numbers last year, because it was kind of a full season last year, he had 22 home runs, 6 stolen bases, a .280 average. The swinging strike was high, but everything else was reasonably solid. And this year he's played the last 5 games straight, including 2 against right-handers, and he's a right-hander, so you'd be afraid he'd be on this short side of the platoon. but he started against the last two righties and all of the lefties. And at first, when he's hitting against lefties, he's playing first base. When he's hitting against righties, he's catching for the most part. So I do think there's an opening there. As long as Indy Rodriguez is on the IL, that maybe they'll really give Flores a good shot.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, because I was an Indy Rodriguez fan, but that stint on the IL yet again, and now Flores is actually producing. I'm like, yeah, that might put a little kibosh on things for a little bit, and we'll have to kind of see how that goes with Indy Rodriguez and that goodness catcher for Pittsburgh, because I don't think Henry Davis is the answer long term. But let's move on to another one here, and this is interesting, and another name that be really popular again next week potentially, and that's Joe Musgrove of the San Diego Padres, set to return from the IL from his rehab stint, actually make his debut, should not even return, make his season debut this week for the San Diego Padres. Musgrove was picked up in 34 main events, average of 11, max of 37, picked up in 25 OCs, average of 4, max of 15. Wasn't available in most of my leagues, weirdly enough. I was surprised to see this number so high. But again, we're talking, you know, with Dr. Jackson Kent, if you need a pulse. Musgrove, we've at least seen. We haven't seen him in a while, but we've seen him. What were your thoughts on Joe Musgrove's return?
I also didn't have him available in a lot of leagues. I think I had him in one spot and was moderately interested in him. He's kind of in the list towards the top. He hasn't looked too sharp in his rehab starts, and you wouldn't necessarily expect great command and longevity coming off the 60-day IL for Joe Musgrove, but he has good track record, obviously a lot better track record than a lot of these guys we're looking at. So seems like he's worth a flyer to see what happens. Maybe sit him in the first outing and see what happens. But I don't know, at this point in the season, if you're picking guys up, you're probably starting him.
Yeah, because he's potentially lined up to face Minnesota this week. So you're probably going to go that route. And then next week it's looks like Pittsburgh if all goes, and it's at Great American. So not the easiest roles, but we'll see with Joe Musgrove. Honestly, there's always a few that surprise me each week. And I'll miss guys from time to time. And apparently Cal Quantrill's one I missed, Ben. maybe it's because I permanently said no to this question, but Cal Quantrill's picked up in 34 main events this past week, average of 6, max of 23, picked up in 23 OCs, average of 3, max of 14. Cal Quantrill is a two-step this week versus Washington, which is usually not a good thing, but no James Wood, but then versus the Angels, usually a good thing. So probably throw great against Washington, struggle, you know how this works. But I pulled up his game log, and it's just like, maybe I should have paid attention more. It's like his last four starts, because he had a little one inning outing. It's one run or two run runs or less. He's got strikeouts a little bit now. I'm still not believing all of this, but what are your thoughts on Cal Quantrill, who was a popular pickup this week?
Yeah, you said the magic words, and that's two-step. So I had him in my bid list. I feel like I need wins everywhere, and that's where I can make up ground in some of my leagues. So I did pick him up in one spot and had him in a lot of my bid lists. He wasn't at the top, but when you're going for the $1 and $2 pitchers, beggars can't be choosers. So I did pick him up in one spot. We're starting him and rolling the dice. I'm looking at one spot where I've got Christian Javier, Cal Quantrill, and Jackson Kent, all with two steps that start tonight. Woo-hoo. So I might not be watching those games. I'll just check the box scores afterward.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right, now we'll get to the name everybody, you know, is raving about across baseball. Joshua Baez of the St. Louis Cardinals, picked up in 32 main events, average of 160, max of 500, 75th percentile of 202. So there's still a lot of money flying around in those main events. But the key number that stood out to me, 32, he was stashed in basically 28 leagues already, which is pretty impressive that either hang on that long or you drop them and someone else got them for like a buck. Like either way,
yeah.
Pretty impressive stuff. Josh Baez was picked up in 226 online championships, an average of 166, max of 533, 75th percentile of 220. I think unless you lived under a rock, we all know Josh Baez, 3 home runs in his first 3 at-bats in Wrigley. But I'll say he's gone 0 for since. So I'm just going to say bust. No, I'm just kidding. Where were you at on Joshua Baez? Because wherever I did pick him up, primarily OCs, it was because I had money, or it went cheaper than expected, basically.
Well, every league where I needed home runs and steals and RBIs, which is every league, I was looking at my budget to try to figure out how much I could afford to drop on him, and I ended up getting him nowhere because I was too poor to afford him. I am consoling myself by putting him into my Dynasty League lineup for the first time, so that's pretty fun. And I did have him on a Draft Champions where I'm starting him this week. But I will point out to defend him, a few people have pointed this out online today, that his three offers today were 106 miles per hour off the bat, 107 and 111, I think. So that's not too shabby. It's a sign of good things to come.
Yeah, he's a stud. I'm not going to take anything away from him. I just love I didn't get the guy, so he stinks. He's your Muskie. No, but he's going to be awesome. Like, the three home runs are just poetic. Just like, it's just, okay, you should have brought him up about 3 months ago, but it was pretty cool. Now, flip side of this, I just want to throw this out here. Some people got a little careless. Javier Baez was picked up in 5 main events, average of 38, max of 106. That'll sting.
That hurts. That hurts. Yeah.
Javier Baez was dropped in 3 mains. Good job. Okay, someone paid attention. Javier Baez was added in 2 OCs, average of 7, max of 10. So that might have been on purpose.
Yeah.
With those prices. And then Javier Baez was dropped in 2 OCs. But I had to mention the 5 main events with a max of 106. That's going to leave a mark. Yeah. That's when you log in at like 7:15, my time, 10:15 East Coast, or even the next morning, and you're like, oh no. What did I just do?
Does this say Tigers? He's not on the Tigers.
Wow, look at this multiple position eligibility. This is so cool. Yeah, no, buddy. Not what you're hoping for right there, unfortunately. All right, next most added player this past week. Hope Ryan Bloomfield's listening to this one. Jeff McNeil of the Sacramento Athletics.
Oh, yeah.
Picked up in 28 main events, average of 6, max of 36. Picked up in 26 OCs, average of 4, max of 16. They're on the road this week, that being the A's, but I believe it's like 5 or 6 righties on tap, which is a Jeff McNeil special. Maybe it's only 4. Still a great week for Jeff McNeil. And coming off a big week in Sacramento, you said the oh yes, you're on the party as well. What are your thoughts on Jeff McNeil, who's refound himself platooning all of a sudden?
Yeah, I'm mock on the train, but yeah, where I needed a little bit of infield help in a couple spots to cover injuries, I had him in my bid lists. Didn't end up getting him anywhere, but it's definitely an option where he's, you know, where you see a right hand heavy lineup especially, and get him in there. Multi-position eligibility helps, so he's just in there to cover for when you've lost somebody.
Yeah, no, it's 100% what he is. He's there in case of emergency, break glass, as I like to say. And so far so good. And honestly, with, you know, 6 weeks left, if 3 of them are in Sacramento, then I'll save them for 3 weeks in Sacramento and see where it goes. And
yep,
that's the name of the game. So we'll see. And yes, Ryan Bloomfield is in the chat and says Jeff McNeil. Oh my God. Yes. Had to throw that one his direction just to remind him that one of the most added players in the main events, because you know, he's worth adding, Ryan. That's what we're doing here. All right, now we're getting into some interesting areas. AJ Smith-Shawver of the Atlanta Braves picked up in 26 main events, average of 10, max of 42. Picked up in 15 OCs, average of 7, max of 15. He made an appearance on the 29th of July, 4 1/3, 2 earned, 4 strikeouts, went back to AAA. There's rumblings he should be joining this rotation. What were your thoughts on AJ Smith-Shawver, who as of right now, he's technically not in the rotation at this moment.
This was kind of one of my blind spots. I didn't have many thoughts on him other than to remember that I have had him in the past and he wasn't all that good. So it's just one of those names you hear and kind of scroll by, but I'm looking at his game logs in AAA and he did have a good outing this on the 11th. Smith-Shawver did, with 5.1 innings pitched, 7 strikeouts, no runs and no walks. But the game before that was 4 walks, so hard to trust that. I think he probably wouldn't take you very deep into the games. It seems like he's being stretched out a little bit, but desperation stream, I don't see any problem with it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, if you need him, but I'm trying to figure out where he fits in that rotation at this point in time. That's the only, like, Martin Perez, Molly, Sale. Like, it comes down to, like, his Elder's knee messed up the way they've said it is. But
yeah,
guess we'll see. I've always been interested in Smith Schauer, but to your point, I've also told myself, like, we know how this train usually ends. So be careful. All right, streaming time is upon us. Brett Bateman of the Toronto Blue Jays picked up in 25 main events, average of 5, max of 18, picked up in 8 OCs, average of 12 for Mr. Brett Bateman, who's been hitting towards the top of that Jays lineup since he was recalled. He has played in, since August 7th, he's played in 2, 4, 6, 8, like 9 games, hit safely in 7 of them for a 275 average, but not a whole lot else on the table there, and primarily a speed and average guy at AAA. So, Brett Bateman, was this anybody on your radar this week?
He's interesting because he's hitting high in the order, and he's only sat versus one of the five lefties that they've played since he's been called up, and he is a left-handed hitter. So, hitting against both-handed pitchers and on a good, you know, not as good as we thought going into the year, but the Blue Jays can have some potential for runs and RBIs. So I had him in a couple lists. I don't think the skills are all that enticing, but it's a good lineup and he's starting. So he's a body. Yep.
Yep. That's the best way to put it. We've hit streaming territory around here when just less than half of main events are starting to add players. So definitely someone there, but let's get to Ben Joyce, because this is someone that people were stashing and it might be coming to fruition now. Ben Joyce was added in 24 main events, average of 41, max of 230. That was a bit aggressive. So it brought the 75th percentile to 37, less than the average. Thank you. Ben Joyce, 120 OCs, average of 15, max of 175, but 75th percentile of 17. Ben Joyce was also dropped in one main and dropped in one OC. Ben Joyce picked up a couple saves this last week, Ben, and looks pretty, pretty good out there. Those Sammy Natera owners are probably like, oh, no, not now. But what were your thoughts on Ben Joyce this week?
I was interested in Ben Joyce. I heard he's throwing 103, and I heard that the manager is interested in getting him some more save experience through the final few weeks of the season. So I wish I could remember that to give credit, but that's what I heard. That's what I have in my head, is that he's going to get the bulk of the save chances for the rest of the year. So with that in mind, I was definitely interested in Ben Joyce, and probably about as interested in him as I would have been in Senga. Okay. Kind of had them paired together in places where I needed saves. So it looks like he's back. I'm all for it. You know, always root for the guys who are the hard throwers coming back from injury.
Yep, I was very much interested. I had Senga slightly ahead of him. Like, the biggest differentiations for me is it feels like Devin Williams might not come back this year. And if that's the case, then Senga's pretty intriguing for like a 6-week span. And the only other difference is Joyce, I don't think, is ever going to throw back to back this year. And so, like, so you might run to like a random, like, oh no, we're going to lose 3 or 4 more saves. That's why the Natera's value is not completely lost, I think, in this one. It's going to be frustrating, but it's not completely lost. But that's where I had Senga ahead of, like, those two little factors there. Otherwise, I think Joyce is really, really good. Like, so I think there's a lot to like with him. Also, could be said for the Mets as well, but how many games are the Angels actually going to win the rest of the season? That's a conundrum as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But those bad teams can win by 1 or 2 runs a lot. So even in their few wins.
Full of agree. Speaking of bad teams, the Angels, will stick with them. George Klaassen was picked up in 24 leagues, average of 7, max of 56. Picked up in 21 OCs, average of 7, max of 73. He's actually dropped in a main event as well. This week, if you're looking at George Klaassen, I believe he has a two-step this week. Yes, he gets at Houston and at Texas. He gets the Texas two-step, as some might like to say. I've always been a Klaassen fan. Last outing was the best we've seen him so far. 6 innings, 2 runs, 1 walk, 5 Ks. Kind of said it earlier with Kent, walks can be an issue with these young kids, and Klaassen's had that. Klaassen's also shown massive improvements at AAA this year in that department. You already mentioned Kent was on your agenda. I'm guessing George Klaassen might have been as well.
He was right there on those same lists where I was looking for two steps. So I've got Klaassen. I've got Klaassen on a team. I told you about my other one, but I've got Klaassen on this team where I've got Mitch Bratt and Rhett Lauder, going for their respective two steps. So another case where we're not watching the games, just looking at the box scores. But George Claussen, he's got good stuff. The command has been weaker. So we're hoping he can hold that command together long enough to get five innings and maybe qualify for a win. I'm mildly optimistic about him. He's got the good swinging strike rate. We just won't talk about the K minus walk in the minors or the majors. In the minors, which is the bigger sample size, it was 10.6, which is well below what we want to see. But we're crossing our fingers at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to be better than people think with him, especially, like I said, if he ever gets rid of the walks, kind of like how Soriano did at one point, how Detmers has, how Walbert Urania has. Like,
yeah, Walbert Urania, the GOAT.
Yep, the GOAT, you know, the legend. Brian's still in the chat. Yes, but the Angels are doing stuff there, even though they fired all their pitching coaches, which is confusing to me. But again, another podcast for another day right there. Next most added player in the main event, and this one's interesting because you kind of mentioned earlier you have Griffin Jacks on your Gladiator, I believe you said, and Griffin Jacks is on the IL, elbow issue, got a shot in his elbow. They're expecting him to start ramping back up. They're saying he might be back in a couple weeks. I'm still very, very pessimistic on this one. But Griffin Jacks was added in 23 main events, average of 9, max of 32. He was dropped in dropped in 3 main events. He was added in 22 OCs, average of 4, max 11, dropped in 22 OCs. The only thing I really care to mention here is people have no idea what to do with Griffin Jacks.
Yep, I full agree. I'm on both sides of that. I think it's team dependent if you have spots to hold, which I don't at this point, and I don't know how anybody does have spots to hold him. I can see adding him, but otherwise I'd be dropping.
Yeah, he's a tough hold. Like, I was dropping Joe Ryan in places, and he might be back in a couple of weeks, so I'm just like, with these pitchers' injuries, it's just one setback and you're done. Shane McClanahan's fooled us. He's pitching Monday night. He came back minimum IL stint with his back injury, but they said he's going to have his innings monitored. So let's just see how that goes. And I'm still any pitcher right now. I'm very nervous on how that plays out.
Yep.
Speaking of those, Jack Leiter picked up in 22 main events, average of 4, max of 11. Picked up in 12 OCs, average of 5, max of 15. I've been writing about it for about 2 weeks now in the Fab column that Jack Leiter will be back after this Sunday. It's maybe one more rehab start, and he's back to join the rotation, unless they decide to skip it and just bring him back early. But Jack Leiter coming back from ankle surgery, it should be ready to roll pretty soon for the Rangers. This is a name that did intrigue me this week, if you could snag him.
Yeah, I think he's a good add. I don't remember him being available in any of my leagues. He was on the 60-day IL for an ankle injury, so at least it wasn't an arm thing. So you wonder maybe if Leiter will come back and have better command than some of the guys coming off arm issues. But seems like a good shot to take here.
Yep, full agree on that. A few more here as we're getting down into some interesting names. But Jared Young, I'm glad this one showed up on here because it was eye opening looking at him this weekend when I was kind of getting ready for Fab. So I want to mention Jared Young of the New York Mets. He was picked up in 21 main events, average of 7, max of 34. Picked up in 10 OCs, average of 3, max of 12. And he was actually dropped in a main event. But the Mets have 5 or 6 lefties they're facing this week. And what I wanted to mention with Jared Young, what really surprised me with him, besides actually just swinging the bat really well, we'll just say since August 1st, Ben, Jared Young is hitting .333. Home run, 10 RBIs, but more importantly to me, he has 2 stolen bases while striking out 15% of the time. I was thoroughly shocked when I dug in on him. I'm not sure if you looked at him at all because he's not like the most popular name in the world, but any thoughts on Jared Young?
I was surprised when he first came up and I looked at him that he'd had some solid minor league numbers. He was an older call-up and spent some time overseas, I believe. So wasn't the profile that I expected to be interested in, but I was interested when he got called up, and he's had some good batting average numbers, a little bit of production. I think I was mildly disappointed, and he was on a skid when Polanco and Semien were back in the lineup, and I was worried they wouldn't have enough room for everybody. So I dropped Jared Young where I had him, but they've still found playing time for him. He's starting against all righties and half of the lefties, which is what surprised me about his profile. I just didn't think they'd keep him in the lineup that much, but he seems like a good ad since he has been getting that playing time.
Yeah, he's a name that I'd have on radars even after this week, folks. He's playing really, really well. Streaky, but playing very, very well. Another streaky player, widely added this week or added more to where he already was, is Tyler O'Neill of the Baltimore Orioles. He was picked up in 21 main events, average of 8, max of 33. Picked up in 29 OCs, average of 3, max of 12. But where it gets good. Dropped in 2 mains, dropped in 2 OCs, so it's not for everybody. But since August 1st, O'Neill's hitting 278 with 3 home runs and playing nearly every single day, Ben. We know how this show usually ends, the Tyler O'Neill show, but what's your thoughts right now?
If you hear lightning and thunder in the background, that's a storm that's rolling in back here, so I'm that's hoping impressive. I can keep power. But maybe it's just talking about how much power Tyler O'Neill has. He's always had the power, and we've known that. It's just a matter of staying healthy. We don't expect the average to be good, but the biggest drawback so far this year is that he was mainly starting versus left-handed pitching. And with Tyler O'Neill starting against righties and lefties, he's very intriguing to me, and I had him on quite a few bid lists, and I think I got him in a spot or two this week when I was looking for power.
Yeah, he was definitely an outfield source. It's one of those, like, okay, if I don't have Joshua Baez money, Tyler O'Neill's a pretty decent like plan B if you're looking for power in the outfield. Like, that's not the worst place to be. I think if we both had to make a decision on like a full season, we'd all want Joshua Baez. But we know Tyler O'Neill, if he can play like 120 games ever again, that's a monster fantasy campaign coming his direction.
That's right.
All right, Brady House of the Washington Nationals was picked up in 19 main events, average of 7, max of 21. Picked up in 14 OCs, average of 5, max of 20. Really love what we're getting from Brady House, because at first it felt like, okay, they're not going to play him even after trading Curtis Mead. But then the training wheels came off and Brady House is actually looking much, much better. His AAA numbers improved and he got sent back down. It's just August 1st, 261, 2 homers, a steal. Could it be better? Yes. But I like the fact he's playing every day. We're seeing some improvements with him. I was very much interested in Brady House this week.
I was too. I like the power, the underlying numbers with the barrel percent and the exit velocity are really strong. Decent batting average expected. And he's played the last 6 straight days versus lefties and righties, 3 of each. So I'm very, very optimistic about Brady House. And he's the name that I'm going to be penciling in for early drafts for next year, because it feels like somebody who might be overlooked in the early going next year, Brady House.
Yep, I like that call a lot. All right, last one that I'm going to bring up, at least in the most added department, and it's only because it got brought up in the Discord today, so I want to get your thoughts on this one. Max Scherzer, picked up in 19 main events, average of 5, max of 17. He was picked up in 11 OCs, max of 19, average of 3. Dropped in 2 main events, dropped in 2 OCs. 100% honest, I have not been interested in Max Scherzer. Now, he's given up 1 earned run or less in his last 3 starts, and he's thrown, you know, 17 innings in those starts. He's struck out at least 4. Strikeout numbers aren't as great as you would want them to be. And the biggest, like, talking point in the Discord today is his matchups, like at Tampa Bay, 2-step next week versus Kansas City and Seattle. Those are intriguing. And then it's at Kansas City after that. I don't know. Maybe I should just take off my tinfoil hat and just go for Max Scherzer, but were you interested in Max Scherzer? Has he been on your radar at all?
He was not on my radar. I was not super interested. I think he is finished. I think he's had a great career, and I'm ready to let him ride off into the sunset, Max Scherzer. But if you are looking for that 2-step and just hoping he can get to 5 innings, that's fine. I think it might be overthinking things a little bit, but if that's your best option, go for it and see what you get. I'm just not convinced he goes 5 innings both times and gives you any kind of quality results. And the strikeouts, like you said, haven't really been there.
Yeah, full agree. That's just my concern. I'm worried every time he picks up a baseball. Like, what are we? The time has come, and he'll never give up till you take it away from him, but it's pretty wild. A couple names I just want to throw out there because these are the max bid leaderboards. We already talked Baez, we talked Joyce, we talked Shane O'Mac. Shane McClanahan got picked up for a max of 120 in two main events. Javier Baez, oof. Cody Bellinger, he was picked up in three main events, max of 98, min of 14. He's going to start a rehab assignment on Friday. Obviously, only available in three main events, not available in most leagues. I dropped him a couple weeks ago because I just wasn't waiting for him to come back. He's slightly ahead of schedule, so good for him proving me wrong, but still have to produce out there. What are your thoughts just in general, I guess, on Cody Bellinger the rest of the way?
I hope he doesn't impact Spencer Jones because I've got some important Spencer Jones shares that I really want to do well. So that's my main thought. I didn't have Bellinger available in any of my leagues, but you got Ramos, Hewlett, Ramos in left, Grisham in center, and Jones in right, and Ben Rice doing a lot of the DHing. So he's going to make things crowded when he comes back. Bellinger will. So since I didn't have an opportunity to really pick him up, I would have if I could have, but it would be interesting to see how the playing time shakes out when he comes back.
Yeah, I am curious to see how that works. Like Ramos is struggling tremendously. He's better than his production's been, but he is in a mess up at the plate right now. Grisham's Grisham. So like in a perfect world, Bellinger goes to center and leave Spencer Jones alone, but we know that's not the world we live in. Random question for you. If you still were rostering Aaron Judge, would you drop Aaron Judge?
Yes, I would, because last update I saw was like Bellinger and I don't remember who else was making progress back soon. Yep, and then Judge, nope. Basically, no timeline for him.
Yep, that's the conundrum with him. Like, I have him in one OC, and I keep telling myself it's got to be for the right drop, and pretty soon it's just going to be for a drop is where that's going to operate here pretty soon. But, yeah, I just wanted to throw that one out there as well. That's about it. I guess the last one, Sammy Notaro was added in 14 more main events this week. I just want to bring this up because we talked Ben Joyce. Max of 91, min of 1. If you were rostering Sammy Notaro, and we talked about how Joyce might not go back-to-backs all season, would you still be rostering Sammy Notaro, and would you be starting Sammy Notaro?
I would be looking for alternatives who would have a better shot at shares. If there was somebody I thought was a halftime or two-thirds of the time save option, then I'd go that direction. I wouldn't be starting Notaro unless I didn't have another alternative that I thought might give me saves, and I was desperate for saves. So just for this week specifically, I'd only put him in there if I was really chasing saves.
Beautiful. No, I agree. He's kind of a week to week thing, and could be we're going to talk about that. I dropped Tanner Scott this week. That's something I've been very adamant not to do, but we will get to that in a second here. Speaking of that, let's get to it, man. Let's talk about our ad drops of the week and kind of our thought process behind that before we get ready to head on out of here tonight.
All right. Let me pull mine up real quick here. August 16th, it was yesterday. So let's see. And it's not in my Draft Champions League, which is for some reason what NFBC wanted to show me. Okay. So in my Bubba in the Bloom League, I got Tyler O'Neill for $8 and dropped Yoshida, who is on the IL. So I'm happy with that ad for Tyler O'Neill. We talked about him. My second ad in the same league was Moises Ballesteros for Indy Rodriguez, $7 on Ballesteros. And how do you feel about that ad, Bubba?
Ballesteros, I'm a fan of. Who'd you drop again?
Indy Rodriguez.
Yeah, you have to. That one thing you'll notice with me is wherever I could drop Indy, I dropped Indy this past week. So I'm fully on board with you there. I like it. Ballesteros hasn't lit the world on fire yet, but I'll sit in Very the world true. Where we could see a catcher play every day. I'm interested. So
And this is the league where I needed two catcher ads. So my next ad was Rafael Flores Jr. for Jimmy Crooks, which I won for $3. So just trying to fill some spots here and get players who are actually starting. Then I added Jack Perkins for $1 for that two-step and dropped Devin Williams.
Let's talk Jack Perkins for a minute.
Okay.
Because I want to get – was this strictly a two-step to get potential wins / strikeouts, or are you a Jack Perkins believer? Because I've been chatting a group chat Ben Tidd, myself, and Ryan have, and Ben Tidd has been going in circles of should he start him this week. And so I want to get your thoughts, the, you know, as people say in the Discord, the better bin. I want to know, Jack Perkins at Kansas City, actually has two steps taken away till potentially later. They're moving pieces around here, but he gets Kansas City this week, which is a great matchup. So what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm starting him. I picked him up. He was in a lot of my bid lists. I think he has better skills than some of the other options. And if you can catch him on the road, you might get something you're happy with. If you look at his player rater, not a lot of positive weeks, a lot of negative weeks. So I don't think it's something you'd necessarily trust long term, but he's got a 16.5 K minus walk and a 3.77 Sierra for the year, which are pretty solid. So I'm hoping that those shine through instead of the surface numbers, which have been pretty weak so far.
Yep. No, I get it. That's why I just wanted to ask him and see where you're going with that one. All right. What else you got?
My last ad in that same league was Rhett Lauder dropped Nick Kurtz. That was a dollar bid for a two-start pitcher. I don't really have anything to say about Rhett Lauder other than he's a two-start pitcher and I'm chasing wins there.
Yep, fair enough. He's gone through two shutout innings to start tonight, so you got that going for you.
There you go. In my best online auction championship, so these are a little more high-pressure ads, I got Esmerlin Valdez for $13 and dropped Taylor Trammell, who I also like, but I just liked the power upside of Esmerlin Valdez a little better. Also added Jose Fermin for $2 just since he's playing 8 games this week. Hopefully, I don't know if he'll get a single hit in those 8 games, but I needed an excuse to drop Gabriel Hughes. So that's what I did. Jose Fermin, Gabriel Hughes.
Look you there.
I added Mitch Bratt for $5 and dropped Mike Yastrzemski, who's been useful and I've liked on the right-hand heavy weeks for the Braves, but he hasn't been doing as much for me lately, and I needed to make a spot. I had a lot of outfielders in that league. Also added Rhett Lauder in that league and dropped Josh Lowe. Added Walker Buehler. You're sensing a theme here. Added Walker Buehler in that league and dropped Emerson Hancock, which I didn't want to do, but I'm purely chasing week-to-week wins and strikeouts at this point. In that same league, I also added George Klaassen and dropped Jacob Lopez, who I also didn't want to drop. But living in a week-to-week world, trying to pile up wins and strikeouts, those are my two weakest pitching categories. I'm in the upper 90s in saves and ERA and WHIP in that team. So I really think you got to strategize at this point in the year and look at what you're weak in. And if you're able to make moves, that's what you be captain cut with the guys that aren't helping you.
Agreed.
Okay. I'll move a little faster through some of these other leagues. Jose Fermin for $3 dropped Dalton Varsho. So that's just plate appearances. Added Christian Encarnacion Strand for $2 and dropped Blade Tidwell. I liked Encarnacion Strand. He's been starting more consistently and definitely has some power upside there. Added Dean Kramer for $5 just because I think he's showing some progress. Dropped Hunter Dobbins, so that was just a preference thing. Added Jack Perkins for $5 and dropped Cody Clemens, who I just didn't need on that team. I had plenty of positional coverage and he's fallen off just a little bit. He was huge in some of my leagues, and especially my DCs early on, Cody Clemens was. So Walker Buehler for $3 dropped TJ Rumfield, where I just had too many first basemen and wasn't starting Rumfield, so I needed the Walker Buehler two-step, which I'm terrified about. Rhett Lauder for $1 dropped Wisniewski. And then my last league of the five fab leagues that I have added Kobe Mayo for $1, dropped Yoshida. To your point about Brady House, I had him ahead of Mayo. I think they're kind of similar, but I prefer Brady House, but Mayo was the one I got. Added Luis Renjifo and dropped Kyle Kiros, who's on the concussion IL. And added Nate Pearson for $1 as a save spec and dropped Blade Tidwell. So those were my add drops.
I love the moving and shaking. You're active, so that's good. I like that a lot. I would like cheap's the wrong word, but a lot of like $5-6 or less bids, which are always great. So just goes to show you can still make a lot of moves and make things work. And if you want to play the two-step game, they're out there, and Ben's proven it. So you just got to roll the dice. Like you said, don't watch the games. Is my
That's right. What about you, Bubba?
All right, for me, the Vegas 12-team Listener League picked up Tyler O'Neill, dropped Willie Castro 7-3. I wanted the power there, and Slick Willie has calmed down quite a bit. Picked up Ben Joyce, dropped Brandon Sproat, who was obviously in AAA. Joyce 6-0. And then I picked up Hollywood Hogan Harris, dropped Gabriel Hughes 4-0. A combination of let's try to maximize saves / anything to get Gabriel Hughes off my roster, to your point. Harris was down the waterfall, is the way that one came to fruition. So a couple closer options there for the weeks that I might not like my starting pitching. In my Vegas AC, picked where I need to keep on the gas on saves because it was Bednar and Romano lately, which is working, but we know how that could quickly come to an end. So I picked up Kodai Senga, dropped Tanner Scott 44-27. I've been holding Scott because I think he's the better closer than Edwin Diaz. Like everyone knows I feel that way, but we also know how I feel about David Roberts, and apparently he's not going to use Tanner Scott. So we just move on, and we get Senga, who actually is closing games. Picked up Brady House, dropped John Rave 9-2. Wanted that upside from Brady House. And then I picked up Tristan Peters, dropped Gabriel Hughes 6-3. Peters and the White Sox, I believe it's 5 righties this week. So a really good week to stream Tristan Peters out there, who's been swinging it much better of late, but in a very strict platoon. In my OLAC, picked up Kodai Senga, dropped Gabriel Hughes 11-10. Picked up Brady House, dropped Garrett Mitchell 7-0 as Mitchell has fallen off a cliff again. Picked up Tristan Peters, dropped Christian Yelich, finally just pulled the pin on that one.
Good for you.
Yeah, I've been in 15s. I kept telling myself, just leave him. Like, nope, go away. Like, just go 4-0 for that one. Just not going to worry about that anymore. The Bubba and the Bloom Listener League, just 2 more to go here. Kodai Senga dropped Ronel Blanco, who's in AAA now, 37-13. Then I picked up Jared Young, who I just love as an outfielder, and somehow didn't pick him up before. Dropped Dane Myers, of course, went deep today, which is great, but he's been so bad of late. Got that one 7-0, so a lot of no runner-up bids. And then in the Beat Bubba OC, I picked up Abby Ortiz, dropped Kyle Karros. This is where OCs are great. 13-0. No runner-up bid for Abby Ortiz of all players. Like, just good stuff. You only got 5 jacks in like 2 weeks, but why? They have like 5 or 6 righties. Why would we want Abby Ortiz? I don't know, but yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Well, what else was good stuff was talking to you, Ben. Had an absolute blast. Any final thoughts, any words of wisdom for the listeners out there as we have 6 weeks of baseball to go, 5 more fab periods. You're competing for a couple overalls, which is awesome. And just generally a nice guy that I enjoyed talking baseball with tonight.
Oh, it's been a ton of fun. I want you to keep us updated on your OCs and how they're doing. You've got a pretty good OC that's up there, don't you?
It's doing okay. It keeps rotating around the top. It's having fun. Yeah. It's my AC. My AC's up there.
Oh, okay. That's what it is.
It was so bad for like the first half of the season, and it's been on a nice run, but it's going to take a lot to get over the hump to get to the finish line, but it's battling, and I've had more fun this year just grinding through that than I have in a long time playing fantasy, and it's been pretty sweet. So it would be a nice cherry on top, because that was the league of death in Vegas. So to walk out of that as a first timer in that room would be pretty sweet. So we'll see what happens. But all right, we'll wrap it up there. Ben froze, so I think he lost power, is my guess on this one. We'll see. But it was a pleasure chatting with Ben Bingham. Make sure y'all follow him on Twitter at Ben Bingham MLB and watch him on the overall leaderboards. You can find me at BD Entrick. Until next time, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 874. Catch y'all later.